CliffCentral.com.
So I've been listening to Dari's 80s show, but I've also been listening to a bunch of mixes that I found of 80s songs. So what it does, it takes every year and it does like an hour of music for that year from 1980 until 2010. Every single year is like an hour. So I could listen to 1995, for example, and it's amazing how it gets you thinking about your memories around that year. You're like, wow, that song's 20 years old or whatever. And you actually can't believe how much you remember in terms of music and song lyrics and things. I remember absolutely nothing that I did in matric for my work, for my subjects, but I can remember the lyrics to songs. You know, it's incredible.
How do we find this show exactly?
No, it's not a show. It's just a bunch of mixes on YouTube. And then what I've done is
I thought you were referring to Dari's 80s show.
No, that's not a, it's not a podcast, but it is a live show.
So
live today.
You can only listen to it live.
You can listen to it today, okay. Damon.
Yeah. What time is it?
11. Okay, 11.
9:11.
Dari, tell us. She'll tell us. Don't worry. She'll let us know. Jesus, that's really bad that we don't know. So what we do have this morning, and while we're talking about things that are still coming up, let me just give you a quick idea of what we're going to be doing a little bit later. I'm going to speak to Alex Simonides. He is the CEO of Capital Legacy. So you know we were talking about Larry King's will the other day. On Tuesday, Sia told us that Larry King's will is suspicious because it's handwritten. It's got a lot of things crossed out on it. His wife of 20 years has been totally left out. And we'll find out what happens with Larry King's will. But I thought it was also a good opportunity for all of us to think about our own wills. Because you should be, even if you're in your 20s, you should be thinking about your will. It's something, especially if you've got stuff. You know, if you don't have anything, obviously it doesn't matter as much. But your will is important. And if you have children or you have dependents, it's really important that you get that stuff in order.
Do your dependents inherit your debt as well?
No, you can't inherit debt.
Just asking.
No, so what happens So what happens is that when your estate is wound up, all the debts are paid off first, and then whatever's left goes to whoever you've left it to.
No.
But if you have more debt than assets, then obviously no one inherits anything from you.
And your dependents, your relatives are not liable?
No, not at all. Unless, of course, it's a, you know, there's a property that still needs paying off for that kind of thing, and they want to carry on paying off the property, then they can do that.
Yes, but in that case, that's why you have life insurance.
Yeah.
So your life insurance will pay off the balance of your bond, right?
Usually, if people have provided properly for that. Some people haven't got life insurance, you know, they've never bothered with that stuff, and therefore, when they die, it goes away. It's incredible. All right. So many things to get into this morning. And by the way, while we're talking about the rest of the show, George Meany, of course, will join us a little bit later on, just before.
It's a Friday.
Just before 8 o'clock, because it's Friday. If you're wondering where Leanne is.
Oh, I wanted to ask. Sorry, yes. You don't mind me asking.
You know what?
What made you guys decide on me today, just out of interest? It's normally Leanne, right?
Yeah, we were going to have Leanne today. She's usually on a Monday and a Friday, but her mom has gone into some hospital surgery thingy, and she has to be there to help her. So she's obviously available this morning.
How's her mother doing?
She's all right. I mean, I spoke to her
just
about
the same or what?
So, I mean, she had, you know, she's had some serious problems since that stroke and everything, and she's been wheelchair bound for a long time, which is very difficult.
Sure. So what surgery are they doing?
I'm not sure. I didn't ask.
Oh, I would have asked.
Yeah.
Is that rude? Honestly, is that rude to ask?
Well,
because sometimes maybe, you know, it's how you ask.
But it's also
Why are you asking?
Yeah, what's the reason?
Because you're taking an interest. You're being empathetic.
It strikes me as it's just being nosy. It's like, to me, it's just like invasive and nosy. When someone asks me that.
I agree, but I think it's how you ask. If you ask it in a genuinely sincere, caring way, which is exactly how
you have asked,
Damon? I would have taken Leanne to the side, not in front of people, and I would have said, Leanne, if you don't mind me asking, what's going on with the surgery? Is she going to be all right? Like, what is, you know, if you don't mind me asking.
And there's something about like the fluttering of your eyelids.
And taking her into a corner.
So,
you know?
And tilting your head.
And tilting the head.
Yeah,
and then she'll say, fuck off, Damon, none of your business.
Yeah, well, the only place I would ask that kind of question is on the show. And it would be because I know that some of our listeners would be interested. But normally, in normal life, I don't ask those questions of people. I wouldn't even ask them necessarily of family.
Like when I read an article that somebody died, a well-known person, I want to know what did they die. I get so annoyed when it says circumstances or details of or the cause of death have not been disclosed. I get irritated.
Now that I have to admit, I don't know why. I also want to know. I've been told it's insensitive to ask. But I always want to know, fast away, what happened? Before I send my condolences.
It's just...
I want to know.
You know, Sia, you asked...
I gotta know.
Sia asked the right question just now. He said, why do you want to know? So you've both revealed that it's not because you're compassionate people or because you care. You've both revealed that actually it's because you're...
My slip is showing.
It's because you've revealed... No, you're both curious. You're both... You're extremely interested in this stuff. The word is prurient. Right? I think we've brought up this word before. P-R-U. Let me just write it down because otherwise I'll spell it wrong. P-R-U-R-I-E-N-T. Prurient.
Yes.
Which means that you're so desperate to know these things, even when they're none of your business. And there are a lot of people...
No, but prurience has to do with sexual matters.
It may have. But it's most
having
used.
Or encouraging an excessive interest in sexual matters, especially the sexual activities of others.
Now you made it
That's
all
also
sexual.
Right.
No, but if it's around death or anything else, and it's not someone who you're related to or who's a really good friend of yours, if it's just some celebrity or someone in the news, which is the example you guys gave, I didn't ask for an example. This, to me, proves that you're actually not motivated by compassion. Mm. The two of you are motivated by pure curiosity.
I can see where you're going with that. But when a famous person or a well-known person died, I'm sad. I want to know. I want to know how they died.
Gareth, I think you're accurate there. Even with a friend, before I send a message on Facebook, I want to know, was it bloody? Did you have to hoist your father up onto your shoulder and rush to hospital? Or did your father just sleep peacefully into eternal peace?
Like Michael Jackson. Mm.
I think you guys are just, you want to know everything. You want to know stuff that isn't even your business, and that's different to being compassionate. That's not buggery.
You know what's your business, what isn't your business in this day and age.
It's a gray area.
So many gray areas this morning. Beth says it's a morbid fascination.
I think so.
You're allowed to ask these questions, but don't be surprised if you sometimes get a hostile answer from people.
Once I get over my fear of the smell of corpses, one day I'd even like to go to a morgue. I'd love to see that.
I've gone to a mortuary. A friend of a friend, let's call her Dory for argument's sakes. She was friendly with the pathologist.
Yeah.
And he did post-mortems at the Hillborough Mortuary. And we all went and we watched and the smell. And you've got to, and remember, this whole mortuary is highly refrigerated.
Yeah.
Even despite the refrigeration, the smell is hectic. How do I describe it? Sure. Yeah, I can't even describe it. It's so strong. Imagine what a body smells like when it's not refrigerated.
A smell of formalin, formaldehyde as well, because that's what they use.
No, in the mortuaries, no, they're not doing formaldehyde.
So then,
because they think about it, they have to do a proper post-mortem. The formaldehyde would interfere with the post-mortem.
So it really smells of dead bodies, at hemorrhage.
One of the things they do is they slice through the tongue, and these pathologists, one of the tools they use is they examine the cross-section of the tongue, and that tells them a lot. And then they also, like, for example, there was a man who died. He was paralyzed when he died. And it was very interesting. He examined the spinal cord. And the spinal cord was of a toothpaste consistency. And because it was of a toothpaste consistency, that confirmed that he was paralyzed. Ordinarily, a spinal cord is going to be more sinewy. It's going to be more like a tendon type structure.
Oh,
interesting stuff, eh?
So just explain, because the smell is it's something I hope I never have to experience, but a mortuary or does it smell of bodies?
Just imagine, have you ever had a bad smell of garbage, rotting garbage?
Yeah.
That's the closest you can think of it. And then add a bit of rotting meat, it's strong. It's strong. But what's amazing is what they don't tell you is that when they do an autopsy, that body is cut to pieces.
Yeah, they do.
It is destroyed, literally destroyed.
Yeah.
It's really.
I mean, they sort of put it together afterwards.
In the case of a funeral, they put it back together again afterwards, I suppose.
Mm.
Sure.
I've told my parents this from the onset. There's a custom with a lot of traditional African cultures or families that you go into the morgue after, of course, you've identified it and the funeral proceedings are underway. Yeah. It's usually just before you take the body home. That's like the day before for the wake, for example, that you have to wash the body down in the morgue and you dress that person up. And then you put them in a casket and you take them home. Let me tell you, that is not something I'm interested in. That is just not going to happen.
No.
I think that's traumatizing, even just being in that place way too long.
Another interesting thing about a morgue is that the whole room is just one large kind of shower.
Yeah.
So there's drain. It's like a shower because think about this, blood, secretions, bodily, yada, yada. So the whole thing is like a shower. Drains, handheld showers,
it must be extraordinary and very, very disturbing for people who are not working in that environment every day. But for people who are, imagine you're a mortician, this is what you do every day. Must be,
pathologists
too. Sure. But I'm talking about people who work in a funeral home, for example, too. I mean, whenever you're working with dead people, it's just something I would never. Well,
I think these people get desensitized because I'll never forget Garrett, that mutual friend of ours, John, who passed away.
Yes,
I'll never forget the mortician say, looking at the mother and without a care in the world. He was a big boy. Hey, he was a large man. I mean, the mother's just lost her son, and he's commenting to the mother how big he was, but in such a matter of fact way. And these morticians, they lose sensitivity and they're not aware. Some of them, they should learn to be more aware of the sensitivity. It was quite something.
Here are a few messages that have to do with this. Nikki says, corpses are gray areas too, Damon, some more than others.
That's an interesting thing. That's when you watch the movies. In the movies or the TV programs, there's a dead body. Mm. If you've actually seen a real dead body, like in dissection or in a mortuary, you know, it ruins the whole fantasy of a TV show because you know that body's not dead because the person's got pink skin still. When a dead body, if it's a white person, that skin is white, 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 eh? White, white, white. So that's interesting.
Rochelle says you will only want to go to the morgue until the day that you have to go and identify a body. It becomes less fascinating after that really quickly. And Michael says, here in Sydney, they have what they call a body farm, where they leave bodies out to see what the Australian heat would do to them in murder investigations. So they
the FBI.
So they have this farm where they leave bodies lying out in the heat to see how long it takes them to decompose, what different weather does to them. Oh, yeah. So if you donate your body to science, they could put it in a body farm like that.
Yeah,
they could,
but I think Gareth, those kind of studies have been done already. I don't think they still do these studies. I mean, it's moved on. I mean, it's also Michael's body's reaction to certain bugs.
Michael's put a link up to the story if you want to look at it on Australian news website. And it was this was posted on the 11th of September 2019. And they're still working on this body farm. So it's
so they're still doing it, eh? Okay, I'm sorry.
Imagine if you take the wrong turn and your GPS screws you up and you just find yourself on this field with piles and piles of bodies.
I reckon you'll come across a gate first, or at least a security boom, where you'll have to, like, they'll take your temperature, make sure you're wearing a mask. You have to fill in a form. So you're not going to just drive. Oh. You're not going to just drive in, I reckon, eh? See ya?
But you can't see it at the distance. See.
Well, this is an interesting question. As Beth says, she'll donate her body to science. Med students always need cadavers to learn on. Would you ever think of donating your body to science?
No, I would donate. I would maybe be an organ donor.
Yeah,
but it's not. Let me tell you something. There's nothing glamorous about it, eh?
Well,
there's nothing. What those medicals? Because I've done dissection, and there's nothing glamorous about being dissected, eh? And there's no. And also, there's in South Africa in particular, because we have so many homeless people. There's no short. I don't think there's really a shortage of cadavers.
Yeah,
you don't really, you know, give your sister a kidney rather. You know, that's.
Jono says, I want to die out at sea, so nobody has to deal with my corpse. They can just throw me overboard. I don't think they
got rules. I think they got laws about that. Are you allowed to be thrown out to sea?
Yeah, you can't do that anymore. You have to return to the country of your origin or whatever it is. They basically keep you on the big ships. They always have fridges for this stuff. It's amazing. Even on airplanes, they have a place where they can keep you if you die. You don't think about it, but they do. Dr. Robin says those trips to the mortuary rank as one of the most difficult things I've ever had to do, and that was obviously when she was a medical student. The amines that are released that make things smell really terrible are cadaverine and putrescine. Those are actual chemicals.
Putrescine.
Yeah.
Horrible. From the word putrid.
Correct. Ugh.
Thank you, Dr. Robin.
The other thing is, if you've ever, I can't believe we're having such a morbid discussion on a Friday morning, but.
Oh, goodness. Who started this?
We talk about wills as well. It's all about death.
It's all going to be death this hour. We can call this the death hour. Good God, how depressing. So an interesting thing about, have you ever tried to pick someone up who's passed out, like just completely passed out, or they're fast asleep and they don't wake up? They are dead weight. You know what I mean by dead weight?
Dead weight.
So a dead weight person, because if you're awake and your muscles are functioning, you can actually make yourself a little less heavy, at least in terms of the way the other person feels about you, because you're lifting your arm yourself or whatever it might be. When you're a dead weight, it's incredible how much heavier you are. And, you know, as Andre says here, that a body in rigor mortis is really, really easy to carry because it's like a plank.
Oh, isn't that GIF?
Yeah, there's
like
no
a GIF. Solid, solid thing.
Right. When I was a medical student, says Etienne, there were cadavers that were 25 years old. The legal paperwork behind getting cadavers makes them very scarce, actually, Dave.
Oh, I'm sorry. I withdraw my comment then. Sorry. Really?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
But you know, there's a lot of great money to be made as well in death. We know because, well, death is always taking place.
You mean like funeral homes?
Well, particularly, I went to school with someone who ended up, he was very fixated on this idea, and look, it's actually worked out for him. Mm-hmm. Like grade 10, he said, yeah, I'm going to drop out. And he went to one of those technical schools, rather. So he did a lot of those handiwork things, but he was set on working on air conditioning and cooling systems. And he has identified his niche from that point and now services a lot of morgues in Durban.
Smart guy.
And it was like 2 years after we matriculated, and he was already rolling in cash.
Oh, yeah.
He thought, those places do need to be cooled all the time.
Well, just to give you an idea, my father passed away in 2012. The funeral, everything together, cost 32,000 rand.
Wow.
Yeah. And you know why funerals are so expensive?
Tell me.
Because that plot that the person's buried in, you are actually purchasing that land. That's why it's so expensive.
Hmm.
You're actually paying for property.
Well, that's,
even though it's even though it's whatever, 2 meters by whatever.
Yeah. Well, there are countries where they've run out of space. While we're on this very morbid discussion, there are countries where they've run out of space, and they now bury people standing up instead of lying down,
or encouraging cremations.
Uh-huh.
They're encouraging cremations, but certain religions
they don't like
don't want to do cremations.
Yeah, I think space saving is a is a consideration. I think, especially if you can
it's a serious.
Put into a municipal.
It's a serious thing. Yeah. I've got a friend of mine. A friend of mine is working for a little business that is videoing funerals because of the whole COVID thing.
Yep.
And people overseas, they're watching the funerals either live on
Yeah.
But they can also watch a YouTube video, or they can go to the website and watch the video. So it's interesting. For example, since December, he's filmed almost 60 funerals.
Yeah,
and that's just in the Jewish cemetery in Johannesburg, West Park Cemetery. So you can there's a lot of the space. Like eventually, we will run out of space.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, just so that the whole of this hour isn't all about death, I mean, how depressing. Damon, you say you're missing President Trump.
You know what? But I knew this would happen. I knew this would happen because I missed George W. Bush because he was a real goof. I mean, but Trump just took it to another level. I mean, he was up to something. He was immensely entertaining. And he knew he was entertaining. When he stood on that podium, he wasn't thinking, I'm the president of the United States. He was thinking, I've got an audience. Let's be honest. And you know what? Let's be honest. He delivered. And I'm really missing. He was highly entertaining. Bernice and I, it's cut out 50% of our conversation.
Yeah.
You know, what are we talking about now? It's just, if you're a stand-up comedian or you're producing a radio show, for example.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I was doing my little podcast. I've run out of I got nothing to say now because Trump is gone.
Well, can I ask you on a related issue, why it is that Bill Gates is suddenly giving us his opinion on everything, and that Bill Gates is being interviewed left, right, and center, not just about coronavirus, which is obviously one of his hobby horses, but he was saying this week, he came out in the news and said, we should all stop eating meat. Now, I mean, it's not a bad idea. I'm not opposed to it. Personally, I don't think we should be telling anybody what they should and shouldn't eat. But Bill Gates is suddenly giving an opinion about what we should all put in our mouths and what we should all have in our diet.
I think if Bill is sitting around the dinner table with Melinda and whoever, fair enough.
Sure.
Talk about not eating meat, but I'm sorry, you know.
Why does he have to keep talking about everything from malaria and coronavirus to software and
here's where the difference comes, absolutely. Here's where the difference comes, absolutely.
Mm.
If he's actively involved in funding malaria research and helping with vaccine distribution, then that makes more sense, right? But how is he involved in not eating meat? He should just stick to what he's involved in. And I think he's a celebrity. He's one of the best known people in the world. So if he's got something to say, maybe that's a good thing. But he can't talk about everything.
Well,
I mean, you know,
you can't shut this fucking guy up. He's got something to say about everything. Apparently, Damon. He owns parts of Memphis Meats, which is growing laboratory meat. So that could be part of the reason.
Well, there you go. Well, what doesn't he earn? I mean, really. Exactly. But you know what? It's up to you. Like, I'll be honest with you. I've never listened to a Bill Gates speech. It's like I've never listened to the U2 album on your Apple phone.
I never
listened to that album. You've got a choice. You don't have to, you know, it's not forced on you. That's the way I see it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, for example, President Barack Obama, I've never listened to any of his speeches. When I listened to Biden's speech, that was the first time I listened to a speech since Ronald Reagan. Even Bill Clinton I never listened to. It's enough. You don't need to speeches are boring. Keep it to five. If it's 5 minutes, great. But you can't talk. My wedding speech, 8 minutes. That's it. You don't need to talk
more. It was very funny. I remember it.
People talk too long. They talk too long.
It was a creed written in the founding documents.
Yeah. I'm sorry. You can say the same thing in half the time. Honestly, you can.
Oh.
But I suppose when it's a big – look, when it's a big occasion, when you're standing in front of the UN, when you're at your inauguration, I suppose you've got to make it long because of the importance. But in hindsight, just sound bites, eh? Just, people only remember Ronald Reagan with Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. People only JFK, Ich bin Berlin, whatever
now,
he said.
Hold on.
People only remember that.
You're talking about you. This is not true for everybody. I'm one of those nerds who actually does go and watch people's speeches from
for 20 minutes?
Oh yeah. I mean I can quote you parts of Barack Obama, Ronald Reagan.
That's where the difference comes.
So there's different strokes for different folks. And I think that these speeches, the longer ones, sure, it gets boring, but some of it's really important. Some of it has to do with the detail of their presidency. It's not just a performance. You know, you sometimes want to know what the person's actually going to do in terms of policy. That sometimes means a slightly longer speech.
On D-Day, when the troops stormed, they landed on Normandy.
Mm.
Do you know offhand how long did Churchill speak for?
No, he didn't. He didn't speak on that day at all.
The next day.
You're referring to the famous Battle of Britain speech, which he gave in Parliament. We shall fight them in the air. We shall fight them on the land.
Oh, yes. How long was that?
That was probably about 10 minutes, somewhere around there.
Churchill had the right idea.
Yeah.
Oh.
Look, it depends on what the purpose of the speech is. Anyway, I just want to refer to Fatiswa's comment here, which is pretty funny. We were talking about death and graves and morgues and all the depressing and morbid stuff. Fatiswa says, I asked that my late husband be buried 9 foot down so that I could be buried on top of him.
Oy vey.
I was 25 at the time and thought I'd never love again. Now, Esh, he'll be all alone that deep.
Oi, how's that, hey?
Yeah.
She's moved on.
That's really interesting. So Annette says she could listen to Churchill all day. You know, he had a severe speech impediment, and he was drunk a lot of the time, right?
Did he have a speech impediment?
Yeah, I mean, what is it called where you have a lisp, like you, well, most incredible. Also used to roll over his R's a lot of the time.
But would you consider that like extreme?
No.
An extreme impediment?
No, it wasn't a problem. But he was often quite drunk at the time that he was making a speech. He started drinking at 9 in the morning, famously.
On Geschlossgut.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. On Geschlossgut.
Schickert.
We've got to get this Dr. Ryan Blumenthal on because he'll discuss all of this. He's written a book called Autopsy, and actually a friend of mine sent me his details just yesterday. So, Sia, I've got this guy's details for you. This Dr. Ryan Blumenthal, he'll be interesting on all of this stuff we've been discussing this morning. If you can stomach it for another day, and we'll see if the audience is interested in it or not. You just let us know. A couple of messages that we've got here while we're waiting for Alex to join us. The God of Verbal Diarrhea, that's you, Damon. Great to have you on the show. Lee Ass's news theme tune, the flute being played out of the ass. Please bring it back. Okay, we'll see if we can help you with that, Dud. Let's get to Alex. I want to talk to him because we've been discussing the issue of wills. It came up because we were talking about Larry King the other day, and it gave us an opportunity to speak to him. Is Alex having trouble joining us, Sia? What's going on? No?
It keeps on saying Alex has joined the room.
And then he's not there.
So he's not – no Alex in the room?
No.
Is there an elephant? There's not an elephant.
So Damon, I've started watching that TV series House, which I've never watched before. But
I went through that phase.
Yeah, my sister got me into it. What's the guy? His name Hugh Laurie.
Hugh Laurie used to also do comedy, eh? In the 70s.
Yeah. He's always been.
He's very funny. But what I found with that show, it got to the point where it was it became repetitive.
Yeah, it's so predictable. I got tired of it. You know that there's going to be a case and it's going to be this weird rare disease. And, you know, it's kind of the same thing over and over again. So I couldn't watch it much more. But it's been fun. I like the character of House. I think there are a lot of doctors who are like that, who are actually not really into people. They're into, you know, they're into knowing about the diseases. So they don't really, it's not about being a carer. It's about being a scientist for me.
In a lot of cases, those kind of doctors, no offense intended, but a lot of those doctors become surgeons or anaesthetists.
Yeah. So they don't have to deal with people.
Yeah.
Yeah. They kind of.
But another great show that I just discovered is Superstore.
What's that?
Superstore. So it's called Superstore. It's in a big, like in a macro, like in a macro type of thing in America. It's with that America Ferrara from Ugly Betty.
Yeah.
Now it's so funny. I thought to myself, this is an old show. It's been around for years. So I think I'm the only one watching it. But
never heard of it.
Oh, I'm also watching it. Oh. And then the other day, and somebody else. Oh, I'm also watching it. So like, it's obviously very popular. It's really good. Never heard of it.
All right. Well, Alex has joined us, so I want to talk to him now, Damon, if you don't mind. Alex,
I'm going to mute myself.
Alex,
watch, I switch my video off.
Just mute yourself. I don't care what you do. Just for God's sake, for all the love of the world, just mute yourself. All right. So Alex Simonides is the CEO of Capital Legacy. And on Tuesday, we were talking about Larry King's suspicious will because it was handwritten. It basically cut his wife of 20 years out. And it dictates that he only has a fortune of $2 million that he's leaving to his kids. Now, there was a lot for us to unpack in that story, so I decided we need to get an expert in to help us understand what was actually going on. And on top of that, he actually has experience of working with the great Larry King himself. So who better than Alex? Alex, it's nice to see you. How are you?
Yeah, nice to meet you finally. Yeah, all good. Sorry for the technical difficulties.
No trouble at all. So before we get into wills and stuff, how did you actually end up doing work for Larry King?
So we did a product launch last year, and we felt it needed a bit of weight. And our company and myself are huge fans of Talk, and he was available. So, you know, these guys are guns for hire, and we brought him on board to do one. You know, very similar to what we actually used Webinar Jam we're using now. We brought him online and did a whole cool live stream. And yeah, he did like a bit of a talk show about the product we're launching, just to give it some weight.
It's amazing.
So that's how we got to meet him.
Fantastic. And of course, you didn't know that he was going to be gone a year later.
No, look, I mean, we did. I mean, truth be told, I mean, the guy was elderly. So we did have a certain clause in the contract to make sure. And I'll tell you, Sia.
Oh, you did?
We actually make sure we could get our money back. Right?
How do you do that?
I won't hold that against you.
Sia, would you just turn your volume down a little bit? Alex is very soft, so I've just had to compensate, so bring yours down a bit. Thank you. Sorry, Alex, you were saying?
About frozen.
No, you're fine. You're good. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's actually quite surreal. So you obviously submit like a script, and you guys on the shoulders, and you submit a script, and it was quite surreal. He came back to us with his own snags on the Word document. Now, you know, you're reading a legal contract and it has LK there, you know, with his comments about who were messing up with our script. So surreal.
So, all right, tell me about wills, because obviously it's important that everybody has some kind of will in place. You know, a lot of people think that it's only for old people to have. You should have a will at any point in your life where you have assets that you want to dispose of and where you have particular requirements that you'd like to see kick into action once you're not there anymore. So everybody needs a will. What does a will consist of? How hard is it to do this? Can you do it yourself? Do you have to have lawyers?
Man, I urge people. I mean, you can go onto Google and there's a whole lot of online packages. You can go to CNA and get a will. But when you do it, and we can see now with the Larry King saga, when you do it DIY, you're asking for trouble. Rather, go see a professional, do it printed. There's no question marks. I mean, I listened to your guys' chat about Larry King the other day. Just raise a suspicion when you've got handwritten or DIY. And then the other thing, guys, is you don't know what you don't know, right? So you might do a will, and you might not know you need a trust for your kids. So you'll say, oh, no, I'll leave it to my kids. And you don't create a trust. And then they're too young to inherit. It's got to go into a guardian's fund with government.
Oh, yeah.
So I would say it's important to do a will, but it's important to consult and do well, because it's not like you made a mistake with your short-term insurance and you can change your cover next time you have a hailstorm. You only get one chance to get it right.
Right. Okay, so this is very important. What are the basic? I remember doing law of succession, and there are basic conditions that have to be met for something to be a will, a valid will. It needs to have your ID. You need to make it clear whose will it is. It needs to stipulate who the beneficiaries and executor or all the other people involved in that will might be, and then it needs to have either written and attested. Proof that this is your last remaining will and testament.
And also it needs to say that this will, this new one, supersedes all previous wills.
Yeah.
So, you know, you guys are talking about the Larry King will and that handwritten one. And the one thing to do is say, this replaces all other wills.
Which is, again, why it's important to date it, because then it has to be your last will and testament. It doesn't help to have the one that's three wills back. And you know, they discover that you've got a much later will in a safe hidden somewhere a couple of years later, because by then they've tried to wind up the estate.
And I think also your choice of executor or executors is important. You know, I always encourage a personal and a professional executor. I mean, if I was your executor, I don't know you, Gareth, but I'm also a professional, so I'll probably work better with someone who's close to you, and then I can do the heavy lifting.
So, what does the executor do? And should you have a lawyer? I mean, you're talking about having a personal and a professional executor, but what does the executor actually do?
So I wouldn't say you need a lawyer technically. I think you need someone that's more experienced in estate administration. Traditionally, it is lawyers.
Yeah.
And our job is simple. We do the heavy lifting. We run to the master's office. We manage the assets. We try to get them to the beneficiaries as quickly as possible. We navigate taxes. We navigate valuations to try, you know, keep the taxes as down as possible. And we drop, well, just to be a bit technical, we drop what's called the liquidation and distribution account. The key is speed. You know, you don't want houses and cars sitting, you know, people make the mistake uninsured or, you know, water bills unpaid. That's our job as executives, is to that smooth transition to the beneficiaries, or as smooth as possible.
All right, here's an interesting question. How can you use your will to facilitate the allocation of illegal possessions? You can't pass.
Yeah, I don't want to be your executive then. I don't want to be your executive then.
You can't be in possession of something illegally and then pass it on to someone, right?
So we've actually had this before, right? I mean, we do 1,000 estates a year, right? 1,200 estates a year.
Yeah.
And we've seen all forms of crime. So we've had everything from bodies and cars to exactly what you're talking about. And technically speaking, right, who am I to say it's illegal?
Okay.
The law actually first has to say it's illegal. So we still administer it. We notify the FIC and all of those institutions, but technically speaking, I don't actually have a say. I'm just moving stuff. But we have to notify the authorities. Oh, I mean, it's a bit dodgy when you've got a car full of cash at Monte Cassino, right? You might just say it's illegal.
Yeah, exactly. What are the more bizarre things that you have come across in a will? I mean, it's very important. C and I had this conversation on Tuesday too. You can't actually rule from the grave. In law, there's a principle that once you're dead, you've ceased to be a person of any consequence in any natural laws, and you can't dictate to living people from the grave what they should and shouldn't be doing, right?
Yeah. I mean, look, you put me on the spot. I mean, some of the crazy stuff we've seen is some obviously very lavish parties. The only problem is they found the will 3 months after the person passed away, so they missed the moment.
That's crazy.
We've had certain items in households with probably 4 pages of subsequent failing options. And this family was huge, but there was this one particular item, and I'm not going to say it, I'm going to embarrass them, but it literally had 4 pages of subsequent goes to my son's cousin. Like, we watched this whole thing. Oh, yeah, so it was crazy.
And people are very particular about who gets the sofa, who gets the TV.
Your talk show, your cell phone.
Sorry?
Yeah, like the cell phone. The cell phone is the key.
Yeah.
People bequest their cell phone. It's
Wow.
It's a valuable possession. And you spoke about it on your show, but we always get a request for a cell phone.
Wow. So you would leave your cell phone to your eldest son or whatever it might be.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, the best worlds don't do that. I mean, unless you absolutely need to leave something big, yeah, like a house or a car. Rather just the simpler the world, the better. Because remember, you're not here to read it.
Yeah, I think mine is like 2 pages.
Perfect. The cleaner, the simpler, the better, the less questions. Everyone can understand it.
Yeah.
And we can do our job. You know, these long lists of maybe people need to do, like, I always say, do last wishes. You know, separate to your book.
Yeah. But that's not a legal document, right?
Yeah, it's not a legal document, but it needs to get your wishes out. It allows you to express.
Oh, so that wouldn't have to do with your possessions necessarily or your funeral arrangements. That would have to do with just what you'd like people to know as you exit the world.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Can I ask a question?
Go for it.
Yes.
Has anyone in your experience put their passwords for their Twitter accounts or their Facebook accounts? Because after they pass away, their relatives can then close their account. Because I'm on Facebook, and I know this one guy that's been dead for 4 years, and it's like he's still there, people you may know. And it's a little bit creepy. Have you ever come across that?
Yeah, it's a big thing now. Fortunately, Facebook and them are starting to enable people like us to make a plan with it. So there's new functionalities coming out.
Oh.
But yeah, so there is some... Not great. The biggest problem is these bitcoins and these
currencies. Yes.
Something that came up years ago.
Damon, hang on. I want him to explain the Bitcoin situation.
Yeah. No, he broke up. I'm sorry. I didn't realize.
Go ahead, Alex.
Sorry, my bad, guys. My bad.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bitcoin and those digital currencies. I mean, there's quite a loot in there. And without the encrypted key, password, I can't get it for the guys.
Yeah. So in other words, it just goes away. It's just lost in the ether.
It's real money. It's real money.
It's serious money. I mean, like if you bought one Bitcoin, you're talking couple of hundred grand.
Well, look, I mean, I personally was part of the wave. I bought at the absolute peak, the highest point, the worst point. Don't trust the investments, right?
At least you're honest enough to admit it. You don't meet people who say that. So, Damon, sorry, you wanted to ask something else.
Years ago, Leanne had a friend of a friend whose the husband passed away. They couldn't cancel his cell phone contract. Has that been sorted out better these days?
Yeah.
Like if you show Vodacom the death certificate, what do they say? Oh dear.
Yeah, no, that's slick. MTN, Vodacom, that's slick.
Okay, so they
that's been
it.
Sorted.
DSTV,
What about an executive's fees?
How's my signal there?
Right. Yeah, that's good. No, we're all right. Executives, how do you know what they should
what
be
about,
what
huh?
they should be paid and what executive's fees are reasonable?
So I mean that's what my business is all about. So
right.
I was a financial advisor, right? Did some wills for clients and unfortunately lost the clients. And you know that it's a percentage, so it's 3.5% plus that. And you think 3.5%. Not a lot, and then you got to then person pass away, and it becomes several hundred thousand rand.
Sure.
And then you start asking questions, you know.
Right.
Hey, all you do is transfer in a property. Why is that 200,000 rand?
Mm-hmm.
Why is that 300,000 rand?
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense. I mean, so a 1 million rand estate and a 10 million rand estate is the same amount of work, right?
Sure.
So that's actually, I mean, I'm not going to get into it, but that's actually what we're all about. We're about driving down that cost. So when people pass away, it's not like this big chunk from their legacy that's going to the executor, but you're still getting the professional work done.
Because, so how do you charge?
Yeah,
do you also take a percentage?
So what we do is we do it the completely opposite way. We give you a little policy. It's like $100 a month, and then that takes care of all the fees. Boom. No questions asked.
Okay. And what if I take out a policy now in my 40s, am I going to be paying that until I'm dead in my hundreds?
Yeah, so we've got a plan that doesn't increase with your age. So, because the last thing we want is you being 80, you can't afford this thing you've invested in for 40 years.
Yeah, sure.
When you need it the most. So, okay. Yeah.
All right. Very, very
so that's
good.
Actually, but yeah, that's what we're about, because those executive fees can get crazy. But your question, Gareth, it's always about negotiating, right? It's about really looking at the time that needs to be spent. So look at the time that needs to be spent. Charge it out at $2,000,
$3,000 an hour. Cool. All right. Well, listen, Alex, we're going to let you go. The signal's breaking up pretty badly, but we've answered a few questions, and I think for the rest we'll have to get you back. Alex Simonides, he's got his own business that deals with this. It's called Capital Legacy, and he's the CEO. We'll find out more, hopefully, if you've got specific questions, you can always direct them to him, or you know, he might come back. We'll see if we can get him back. It is just before 8 o'clock, not 9 o'clock. We've got to get to George Meany. Let's see what George has got in his agenda for this Friday morning. And a couple of really good questions coming up from people about, you know, wills and all the rest of it. But we're finished with that now. I'm afraid we don't have much time for any more of it. Otherwise, we're going to run out of time for this morning. Damon, what are your weekend plans? Have you got any?
Sure. You know, with a fractured rib, not really. I've made no plans. There's no plans at all. I hate to admit this, but I lie back and I watch a lot of TV, which is not healthy. But that's what I do. Well, that's my life.
I cannot tell you how excited I am about the fact that I'm not feeling sick anymore. If you listen to yesterday's show and you listen to today, it's like two different people. I'm going to jump up and down for the whole of the day today to try and make up for all the exercise that I haven't done this week. And I feel so good about feeling better. God, I hate being sick.
How long were you sick for?
Really only Wednesday and Thursday, but I started feeling a bit sniffy on Tuesday.
But no post-nasal drip, eh?
Not really, no.
Because that's where you're lucky, Gareth. Because you get the post-nasal drip, and then you get that's when your voice gets affected. So, you know, your voice is your bread and butter. So you're lucky. So well done.
Yeah, a lot of people can't believe that you actually got a fractured rib from COVID. It's incredible. Oh. All right.
No, the jungle gym tippled over.
Yeah, we heard the story. All right, George, how are you?
Good and you, Gareth.
Good, nice to see you. What's going on with you this weekend? You got any plans?
I haven't planned anything specific. I'm not going to do what Damon's doing.
No. Don't get on a jungle gym with a carpet and then let it fall on you.
That sounds like, what does that dude with the flying carpet?
Aladdin, yeah. Damon was saying it's such a big carpet that you could have the whole cast and crew of the Aladdin movie on there and there'd still be space. So speaking
plus of... Plus Robin Williams, I've shot him.
Plus, speaking of flying carpets and other such things, there are all kinds of things in the world of motoring that we get to speak to George about every week. And you don't want to miss their Auto Central show, which is also still on cliffcentral.com, a fresh episode every week. You need to go and check it out on the website. What do you got for us today, George?
Well, talking about flying things, Gareth, the world's first flying car travels 100 miles per hour at an altitude of 10,000 feet and is approved. I think this is the important part by the Federal Aviation Authority, the FAA, in the United States. So this car is allowed to fly at the moment. It's not allowed to drive on the roads because it's not approved for roads, which is a funny part.
Oh, so it can fly now, but it can't drive on the roads. The whole point is you want it to be able to do both, for heaven's sake. What are these people not understanding? George, every time I think we've made a breakthrough, then there's something that holds us back.
Well, apparently it's less cumbersome to get approval to drive on the roads over there than it is to get to fly. So I think they've done the hard part.
Now, is this a vertical takeoff and lift car?
No, it's a it needs a runway, and it has to use a runway, but it can take off apparently while driving within 1 minute.
Okay, but you see, George, again, we're going backwards here instead of forwards. The whole reason I wanted one of these cars, and who knew we'd end up in a time where traffic would come down rather than go up, but thanks to COVID, that's the reality. So this thing needed to be all I wanted was something that if I was stuck in traffic on the N1, I could switch on those jet engines and just lift up and go. Mm-hmm. That's all.
I think that's coming. It's you know, drones are making that possible. I mean, this lot, you know, I would imagine this design has come from years ago, because if you look at the image I just sent you, it looks like a frog.
It's a very ugly little car, a very ugly little plane, actually. It's got little fold out wings. This is not what I had in mind.
Not inspiring.
No.
Is this Mercedes, Bia, who's the company?
No, it's not Mercedes. It's an independent business, and
it's called the Terrafugia Transition.
Yes.
That's also not a good name.
So they got no car experience.
Well, I don't think they've got anything.
Have they got plane experience? Flying experience.
I would imagine they would have flying experience, but I don't know. Maybe you can tweet the CEO, Kevin Colborn.
Yeah.
Kevin Colborn.
Damon's going to tweet him and then get cancelled. Yeah, he will. All right.
And he'll phone me.
Yeah, he'll phone you and ask you for an apology. All right. So what else is going on, George?
Well, it's a little bit of an exciting app. I want to go and check it out over the weekend and see whether South Africa exists in this app. But a gentleman or a guy named Erkan Sirker, a Turkish graduate student, was tired of not being able to drive around his city. So what he did was he created an app, a virtual reality app that has 53 cities built in, and you can take a virtual tour of your city and listen to local radio stations as you go along.
Wow.
So it's called Drive and Listen.
Okay.
So I want to go and see whether he's thought of Africa at all.
That's very clever. All right. I'd be interested to see that. Cool.
Very, very clever, I thought. And then I don't know if you heard about the Cape Town story. Sadly, this week, one of the luxury dealerships in Cape Town called the Toy Shop was vandalized by 40 people.
All right. So what actually happened? You might have more info on this, because what I heard is that it was people who came in, they demanded two cars. Then the dealership said, F you, obviously, because they hadn't paid for any car. And they just brought a bunch of guys in with golf clubs and baseball bats and whatever else they could find, and they just started smashing up the cars.
So there's no more information than that, exactly what you've described is what everybody knows. I try to phone the owner of the dealership to express our horror, but he's obviously busy with dealing with this issue. But it's sad that 40 people can walk into a business and just stuff things up like that.
And we don't know anything about any motive other than just vengeful nastiness.
Exactly. You know, it might come out over the coming days, but at the moment we don't know much.
Very well.
Are there any leads?
George,
don't know yet.
What is George, the investigating officer?
Well, in other words, CCTV footage.
Yes,
CCTV footage. You can see the video of them smashing up the cars, walking around, baseball bats.
All luxury cars, like fancy cars, like sports cars?
Lamborghinis, Porsches.
Oi. And are you insured against something like that? I doubt it.
Well, the dealership would be insured against something like that, I'm sure.
Whoa, I hope so.
I mean, it's a very sad story, but what I found kind of comical in the video, one video was the guy walked in and tried to smash a car's window with a mop. I don't know if you saw that.
Fucking idiots.
It was his first time.
Oh.
Exactly.
It was resourceful.
So, George, on your previous story, Peter Sneyman says that in Johannesburg, you can actually find the Joburg Drive and Listen. And you'll be
lovely.
So you can go and check that out. Good stuff. Thanks, Peter.
All
right, cool.
Yeah, and very, very lastly, I don't know if you watched or even considered watching the State of the Nation address, Sona.
No.
No. But I'll focus only on the automotive sector for a second. And that is our transport minister outlined a number of initiatives which are currently being worked on by the department, including scrapping 63,000 taxis and sorting out the issue of e-tolls. So a previous one could be possible. The last one, I don't know what sorting out the issue means, but he says he would prioritize shifting road to rail. Now we've had a fantastic rail network in South Africa, and we should use it.
Yeah, well, I mean, especially for freight, because part of the reason that our roads were and remain so congested and that we have so many accidents is because there's so many huge big trucks on them that don't need to be there. A lot of that stuff could move to rail.
It could move to rail. So the transport minister says that a focus on moving road to rail, specifically for freight, as you say, is the thing that that we're supposed to supposedly going to be focusing on. But the taxi recapitalization plan or program apparently will deliver the scrapping of 63,000 taxis. Now, if I remember correctly, we did this about a decade ago, didn't we?
No, 1996. That's when the government first said they were going to do it. 1996.
But hang on. And, this is all good and well until you remember who our transport minister is. And when you realize it's Fikile Mbalula, you're like, well, all of this is just theory.
And what are they going to replace the taxis with?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, years ago, they tried to replace them with those bigger taxis. Yeah. You know, those, I think it was a 20-seater.
Which has been done, but to a very, very small degree.
Very small degree, exactly. Exactly. So let's see what happens with these 63,000 taxis. And then, I mean, that's all I have for you this week, Gareth. But what I'm concerned about over the weekend, and maybe a reason to stay indoors, is you've heard about this sulfur in the air.
Yeah, it's from Mpumalanga. Jeez, it smells. I mean, it's like really bad. And for people with allergies, it's affecting them horribly. I think that's what I had.
My next door neighbor's got one of those air purifiers. It's a smart air purifier made by Xiaomi. And I went to go and Google it. And apparently it's one of the worst air purifiers on the market. It only gets about a 65% particle removal result. Uh-huh. Whereas others get up to 90% of particles, big particles removed. But nonetheless, it's a smart air purifier, and it was saying during the course of this week, your air in your house is bad.
Really? So it actually picked it up all over Joburg and Pretoria, apparently. Listen, it's not good. I just want to go to a quick email, George, before we say goodbye. This is from Oki. He says on the issue of the minister of transport, actually. He says, I'm not sure if you guys have discussed this already, but what do you think of the new 0% limit when driving? I think we have addressed it at a certain point, but he goes on, It means that you'll not even be able to have one beer or glass of wine with your meal at a restaurant. Who could have a steak without a glass of red wine? Or shall I ask, who wants to have a steak without a glass of red wine? It's going to be hard on the restaurant business, the pub business. They're already suffering. There is no way that you can use your own transport if you're going out to dine and have alcohol. Even with parties at your house, that'll mean nobody can drive home. You will have to use Ubers or taxis. It's pretty crazy. What do you think, Oki?
Well, I mean, let's just what are the limits? So the transport minister did address this in the State of the Nation address and said the concentration of blood alcohol in the blood specimens must be less than 0.05 grams per 100 milliliters. And in the case of a professional driver, less than 0.02 grams per 100 milliliters. And we're moving to a 0.0, which is zero, nothing. You're not allowed to have anything in your blood. I'm all for that. Yes, you know, everybody wants to have a glass of wine with their dinner and with their steak and whatever the case may be. But at the end of the day, you know, people don't they don't respect the fact that drinking and driving is bad. So while this is going to be hard to police, and I think it's going to be difficult when you eat other things and it contains alcohol like cough mixture. So policing of it is another story. You know, something to make our roads safer. The policeability of it is a question mark for me.
And it'll be a boost for Uber.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I want to have a glass of red wine with a steak. I'm in the same corner.
Well, I must tell you, these days, if I know I'm going to even have one drink, then I just like an Uber. And even if it's expensive, it's just way cheaper than having to deal with fines and possible arrests and everything else.
Exactly.
All right, George, thanks very much. Good to speak to you as always.
Nice to see you, Damon.
Oh, really, is it?
Good to see you as well. You look Have you seen I've lost weight?
I see that. I was about to say, but I didn't want to be disrespectful.
Oh, I've only got two chins and not three.
Oh, okay. If you say so.
Okay.
I've got a selfie with you from about a decade ago.
All right.
Oi, okay.
Yeah, I'll send it to you.
All right, guys. Thanks very much. Lovely weekend, everybody. Be good, and we will see you on Monday at 6 o'clock, bright and early. Thanks, Damon. Thanks, Sia. Thanks, George.
Excellent.
Thank you mostly to you for joining us today. Thanks, everybody. CliffCentral.com.